thus far in our study of Old Testament characters and what lessons that we hopefully can learn and benefit from them. And tonight we're looking at Asa, who of course was one of the kings of Judah. In fact, Asa was the third king of Judah. We talked last week concerning the divided kingdom that resulted at the end of Solomon's reign. And to just sort of get a little bit of a graphic, sometimes they say a picture is worth a thousand words. This, of course, is the time in which all 12 tribes were united, and, of course, the three kings that ruled over that united kingdom. But then, after Solomon, the kingdom divided, kingdom to the south, kingdom of Judah, made up of Judah and Benjamin, the kingdom of Israel to the north, made up of 10 tribes. And we've studied already the first king of Judah, and that is Rehoboam. We studied the first king of Israel, and that was Jeroboam. And of course, we saw, or we will see, that Abijah is actually the second king, but for the amount of material we have to study, we're going to be looking at the third king of Judah, and that is Asa, who, as we see, was the third king. He was the most, for the most part, a good king. In what we read in 2 Chronicles 14 and verse 2, Asa did what was good and right in the eyes of the Lord his God. We see that his mother, however, even though his reign started off good, it did not end up well. He reigned for 41 years, and we're going to find that that's the longest reign so far since there had been kings over Israel, whether united or divided, that he will be the first king to reign longer than Saul, David, Solomon, or Rehoboam, or his father, because as we see, his father reigned only a very short time. But what I want us to make sure of in both our study tonight and for the outlines that you have, is that unless I otherwise give a book, all of the references, scriptural references, in the rest of the outline will be found in 2 Chronicles. So unless it's otherwise stated, all of the passages that don't have a book designating them are 2 Chronicles. When we look at the life of Asa, as we already mentioned, Abijah was his father. That we read in chapter 14 and verse 2. And what that does is it makes David Asa's great-great-grandfather. So we have Asa that we're studying. We have Abijah that really not all that much information is given about. He only reigned a very short time, about 3 years. And so it's going to be in our study of the kings about like it was in our study of the judges. There were some judges that there just really wasn't any details given other than just names and maybe how long it was that they judged. And this is true of our study, whether the northern kingdom or the southern kingdom. We're not really able to look at every single individual king in both of those kingdoms, but the ones that we have the most information about, the ones that hopefully we can draw the lessons from that will benefit us. So we have Asa, Abijah, his father, which would make Rehoboam, his grandfather, Solomon, his great-grandfather, and David, Asa's great-great-grandfather. His mother, and this is more rightly truth in the matter, his grandmother was Masha. And in chapter 15 and verse 16, we read that also he removed Masha, the mother of Asa, the king, from being queen mother, because she had made an obscene image of Asherah and Asa cut down her obscene image, then crushed and burned it by the brook Kidron. So that's what we see in 2 Chronicles concerning Masha and Asa. But we see the clear picture of it in 1 Kings. In the 15th chapter, verse 2 is referring to Abijah, Asa's father. He reigned 3 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Marcha, the granddaughter of Abishalom. So here we're seeing that Marcia is the mother of Abijah. Now verse 10, which is in reference to Asa, says he reigned 41 years in Jerusalem. His grandmother's name was Marcia, the granddaughter of Abishalom. Also, he removed Marcia, his grandmother, from being queen mother because she'd made an obscene image of Asherah, and Asa cut down her obscene image and burned it by the brook Kidron. Apparently, what takes place with Marcia is that Abijah puts her in authority to whatever extent, whether that authority was just sort of a figurehead or whatever. But anyway, she was referred to as the queen mother. And so that would grant her a position, whether it just simply from the standpoint of prestige, whether there was any actual authority that went with it or not. But anyway, it was definitely a position. And apparently she held her position even after her son, Abijah, no longer reigned. And it wasn't until her grandson, Asa, came to the throne that he has her removed. He has her stripped of title, position, whatever, however you want to call it, because of the reasons that we've read both in 2 Chronicles and also there in 1 Kings. She was a part of Abijah setting up idols and causing Judah to go off after the worshiping of idols. So a little bit of thing there that we do well to make sure that we understand, because of the position of her being the mother, the queen mother, she was in this position, and she did not lose that position just because Abijah no longer was king, but even carried it to whatever length of time with Asa. Asa reigned, of course, over Jerusalem, and in reference to Judah, rather. And his reign started with 10 years of peace that we see in chapter 14. Verse 1. We know he reigned 41, so 10, those first 10 years were years of peace. And it was during this time that Asa went throughout the kingdom of Judah, the southern kingdom, and he destroyed the idols, the altars, and the high places of worship. Whenever we see in the scriptures reference made to the high places, to the groves, all of that is idolatry. And this when Judah was attacked by Sira, the Ethiopian, Asa is doing great so far, much better than his father. So the changes that we see that were brought about by Asa, we see in chapter 15 in those first 19 verses. He removed the idols from Judah and Benjamin. He entered into a covenant with the people, that they were going to serve the Lord. As we mentioned, he removed the queen mother, Masha, and this all resulted in really about 25 years of peace because of him doing the right thing early on in the beginning of his reign. And then war takes place with Israel. You wouldn't think that kinship would go to war with one another, but they did. And what this takes place over is the king of Israel, which is Baasha, or Baasha, however you want to pronounce it. He closed the border between the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom. And really what Baasha was trying to do was similar to like what Jeroboam was trying to do. Remember Jeroboam set up the golden calves in Dan and Bethel and told Israel, "Hear Israel, of the gods that brought you up out of the land of Egypt." And remember, he did all of that because he did not want the nation of Israel going to worship in Jerusalem for fear that they would go and they would remain and he would have nobody to reign over. Well, apparently Baasha feared the same thing. So he tried to seal the borders between the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom to prevent the people from traveling from the north to Jerusalem to worship God as they were commanded to do under the law of Moses. And so this is what the war was over between Judah, Asa, and Israel, Baasha. So we see on this occasion, instead of Asa putting his trust in the Lord, he makes a treaty with Syria. No mention, no involvement, no going to and seeking advice or counsel from the Lord. He just simply goes to Syria and forms an alliance with them. And they defeat Baasha. And they reopen the borders. They destroy all of the things that Baasha had set up as a barrier, as a wall. And they destroyed all of that, the stones, the logs, and everything that Baasha had put forth to try to seal off those two nations. So he was victorious, even though he did not seek counsel from the Lord. And this results in Asa being rebuked by Hananiah, I think is the right pronouncing of it. Hananiah comes to Asa and he rebukes him for trusting in Syria rather than trusting in the Lord. Asa had trusted in the Lord to begin with, on the occasion when Judah was attacked by the Ethiopians. But now his own kinship are attacking, or at least they're sealing the borders, and he goes to war and makes no inclination, as chapter 16, verses 17 through 10. And so in return for Hananiah's rebuke, look what we read in verse 10 of chapter 16. Asa was angry with the seer and put him in prison, for he was enraged at him because of this. And Asa oppressed some of the people at that time. So he had a temper. And that temper went beyond just the anger that he had toward Hananiah. It even spilled over into the people. There were those of the people that he oppressed because of his anger. Now, the result of the end and closing to the end of Asa's life, Asa suffers from a disease. The Bible says it's in his feet, and it was for the last 2 years of his 41 years of reign that he had this affliction. And the Bible tells us in verses 13 and 14 of chapter 16 that he died. He died after reigning 41 years, and he was greatly mourned by the people. So that pretty much is the life that we have had recorded of the third king of Judah. All right, let's look at some lessons, since that's what really our focus is concerning with. One lesson that we can learn is that we must learn the value of putting God first. Now, you know, we see this in nearly every character that we've studied. And we've studied some 30 of them. This one would be the 30th. But we see this very thing of putting God first in almost all of the characters that we've studied, and just continue to notice it. You'll also see it in the other characters that we'll be studying in the future. We see that whether they did or whether they didn't, we see what the results was. And when you think about it, when we see this so much, so often, in all of these characters, you know, this has to be the overall lesson that we need to learn, that we need to sit up and take notice to. And I hope that we do. Because it's there in every one of these characters. Whether or not they put God first, if they did, what was the result? If they didn't, what was the result? So let that be the overriding rule, lesson that we see. Because what we've seen is that Asa began his reign, as we said a moment ago, by doing good. He destroyed the idols. He destroyed their places of worship. And the Lord gave him and the nation of Judah rest. And he gave them strength, as 2 Chronicles 14 and verse 6 said. And again, this is the lesson, I believe, that is repeated over and over throughout the kings of Judah. And that is, those who served the Lord were blessed. Another lesson. What a blessing it is to have help from the Lord. When Asa went up against the Ethiopians, he was faced with a much larger army. In fact, if you read or read there in chapter 14 and verse 11, from the two tribes that Asa had to draw from, Judah and Benjamin, he had a grand total of 580,000 men of war. Now, we consider that a pretty good sizable number. These 580,000, they had spears, they had shields, and they had bows. But the Ethiopians had 1 million men. 1 million men of war. And they had 300 chariots. So they were well more advanced and just two times the number. They were outnumbered twice compared to what Asa's army was. But Asa went and sought counsel from God. And despite those odds, he was victorious. The Lord responded by answering his plea for help. And that we see in verses 12 and 13. So, again, the lesson is that God helps those who trust in him. That's what we see in verses 14, 15, and 16 of 2 Chronicles 13. But we also have this verse in 1 Peter. 1 Peter chapter 5. Therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time, casting all of your care upon him, for he cares for you. I want us to focus attention on that statement, under the mighty hand of God. I really don't think we can fathom what that phrase is saying. I think it's beyond our comprehension to even begin to understand the mighty hand of God. We see it in situations like this, but I really don't think that we really understand that we're serving the same God today that Asa went and sought counsel from. We serve the same God today that gave Asa the victory over 1 million men when he only had 500,000. All they had was bow and arrows, and they had chariots. The mighty hand of God. Cast all of your care upon him, for he cares for you. So truly, what a blessing it is to have help from God. And we need help from God, and we receive help from God when we do what that first lesson says. That we learn the value of putting God first. Another lesson. We can learn from Asa the key to God's care in our lives. Really, it was proclaimed by the prophet Azariah. Let's look at 2 Chronicles 15, verses 1 and 2. Now the Spirit of God came upon Azariah, the son of Oded. And he went out to meet Asa and said to him, hear me, Asa, and all Judah and Benjamin. The Lord is with you while you are with him. If you seek him, he will be found by you. But if you forsake him, he will forsake you. I want us to look at that right there. The Lord is with you while you are with him. That's a condition, isn't it? It's just not that the Lord is with us. And that's just a general blanket statement. No. The Lord is with us if we are with him. That has to be the condition to be met. And then as the latter part of the verse said, if we seek him, he will be found. But if we forsake him, he will forsake us. So, the Lord is with us while we're with him. You remember what James said in James 4, verse 8? Draw near to God and he will draw near to you. How do we draw near to God? Cleanse your hands. You sinners. Purify your hearts. You double-minded. We cannot be with God when we are sinners. Sin separates us from God. Sin prevents fellowship with us and God. So these are the things that has to be forsaken. These are the things that are a part of meeting that condition, the condition that God is with us while we are with him. So we're with him when we cleanse our hands and purify our hearts. And remember, the passage says that if you seek him, he will be found. Well, that sort of reminds us, if it doesn't, of Matthew 7, in the Sermon on the Mount, when Jesus said in verse 7, "Ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you'll find. Knock and it will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, and he who seeks finds, and to him who knocks it will be opened." Remember what Paul said on Mars Hill in trying to set forth that unknown God that they had that shrine? He said that seek God, that he may be found. Because God is not far. I like that statement that I sometimes hear. If we don't feel close to God, guess who moved? See? It's all on condition. It's all on condition of us. Forsake him, and he'll forsake us. Remember Hebrews 10, verse 38? "Now the just shall live by faith, but if anyone draws back, my soul," and I misspelled the word, I'm sorry, "my soul has no pleasure in him. But we are not of those that draw back to perdition, but of those who believe to the saving of the soul." So see, there are the keys that we see here in Asa's dealings that helps us to see how that God does take care. How that God will provide. How that God will see to us in the things of this life. And then another lesson is we must not put family before God. You remember the example of Asa's commitment to the Lord back in 2 Chronicles 15 and verse 16. Also, he removed Maacha, the mother of Asa the king, from being queen mother because she'd made an obscene image of Asherah, and Asa cut down her obscene image and crushed it and burned it by the book Kedron. The grandmother. You know, a lot of people won't obey the gospel because of their grandmother. They won't do what's right because they feel like that to obey the commandments of God somehow condemns their parents, their grandparents. You know, I don't know if this was an easy thing. Asa was a human being. He was just like you and me. So I cannot help but to think that this was a somewhat difficult thing, but he knew it had to be done. He knew that to pardon or to allow her to continue to be queen mother and continue on with this idolatry that she herself is responsible for, at least this particular one, that was not right. And it was not right just because Asa didn't think it was right. It was not right because Asa knew that God was opposed to it. So Asa knew what God required. Asa knew what his grandmother was doing. And so there was his choices. Please God, and take care of grandma, or claim to love God and let grandma do her thing. But what we see him doing is he removes her. He did to his grandmother what Eli wouldn't do to his sons. Eli prized his sons above God. Asa didn't. Asa did not prize his grandmother above the Lord. And you know, Jesus, he had that same commitment. You remember that occasion in Matthew 12, verse 46, that while he was still talking to the multitude, behold, his mother and brothers stood outside seeking to speak with him. Then one said to him, look, your mother and your brothers are standing outside seeking to speak with you. But he answered and said to the one who told him, who is my mother and who are my brothers? And he stretched out his hand toward his disciples and said, here are my mother and my brothers. For whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and sister and mother. What does that tell us? That tells us that when we become a Christian, we have a totally new and different family. It's not mom and dad. It's not brother and sister that holds supreme in our lives. It's those that are doing the will of God. They are our brothers, our sisters, and our mother. There's one other passage, and he expects us to do no less. In Matthew 10, verse 37, he says, he who loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And he that loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. Eli was not worthy. Why? Because he elevated his sons. He rebuked them, you remember? But they remained priests. They still carried on doing the sacrifices and dealing with the children of Israel the way they did. They still carried on with their fornication. Oh, he rebuked them. But God said, because you didn't remove them, you treasure them above me. And you remember the curse that God put upon Eli's family. Asa was willing to do what it took to get rid of the idols and, to the best of his ability, the influence that idolatry has had that was partly the responsibility of his grandmother. So we're expected to do this thing. We must not love our maternal and paternal father and mother more than our Lord. He comes first. Just like we saw in that first lesson that we see in Asa. So, Luke 14 and verse 26, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. A lot of people have trouble with that verse. Just like people today have trouble with that four-letter word, H-A-T-E. The word hate means love less. It doesn't mean that we don't love, respect, and appreciate our mothers and fathers, our children. We're commanded to do that. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and mother, for this is the first commandment with promise. So we're told to love them, but the hate that Jesus is talking about is we must not elevate them to the point where that we transgress God's law or we fail to do what God says to do on their account. See, our faith in God and doing His will, that's more important than family. Regardless of how much we love mom and dad, regardless of how much we love brother and sister, when it comes to be a matter of our faith in God, that has to be more important than our family. Loving our family will not necessarily get us into heaven. Loving God will. We know that for certain. Another lesson. Leaders can only do so much. Asa did what he could in the kingdom of Judah. We see that Asa did what was good and right in the eyes of the Lord his God, for he removed the altars of the foreign gods in the high places and broke down the sacred pillars and cut down the wooden images. He commanded Judah to seek the Lord God of their fathers and to observe the law and the commandment. See, this is what Asa did. But then look what we see. He commanded Judah. So yes, he was every bit the king that he needed to be. But what we see in verse 16, all of Judah rejoiced at the oath that they had sworn with all of their heart and sought him with all of their soul, and he was found by them, and the Lord gave them rest all around. But, but the people in Israel held on to those high places. But the high places were not removed from Israel. Nevertheless, the heart of Asa was loyal all of his days. So see the lesson? Leaders can only do so much. Asa did what he needed to do. Asa did what was right, but getting the children of Israel to follow suit. See, unless the people follow, no good leader can be completely successful. And then God helps those that trust in him. Asa began trusting more, remember, in human resources. When it comes time to confront terror, he went to Syria. It's different from what he did the first time. And this had an adverse effect in Asa's life. We see that Hananiah rebukes him, and we find that the king of Syria has escaped from your hands. Were the Ethiopians and Libyan not a huge army and very many chariots and horsemen, yet because you relied on the Lord, he delivered them into you? He reminded him. The prophet reminded Asa of his battle with the Ethiopians and how the odds were so against him. So you see, the Lord seeks to show himself strong for those whose hearts are loyal to him. It says, for the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth to show himself strong on behalf of those whose hearts is loyal to him. In this you have done foolishly, therefore from now on you shall have wars. In the final lesson, we must ever be cautious of the pride of life. You see, when he was younger, Asa heeded the counsel of Azariah. When he was older, Asa reacted angrily at the rebuke of Hananiah, and he took it out on the people. We read that a moment ago. And so, just as the lust of the flesh can strongly affect the youth, and the lust of the eyes can strongly affect the middle age, so the pride of life can strongly affect the age. There's no age in our life but what those three things are not going to in some way have their effect upon us. There's no such thing as being too young or too old. So in conclusion, Asa reigned longer than any other king, longer than Saul, David, and Solomon. They all only reigned for 40 years. Asa was blessed to reign 41. But, like a long-distance runner who falls short of the finish line, Asa failed toward the end of his life. He tarnished what would have been an otherwise outstanding reign. So Asa rested with his fathers. He died in the 41st year of his reign. They buried him in his own tomb, which he had made for himself in the city of David. And they laid him in the bed, which was filled with spices and various ingredients prepared in a mixture of ornaments. They made a great, very great burning for him. So Asa was evidently loved by the people. So in conclusion, may the example of Asa, together with the counsel of the prophets Azariah and Hannah, encourage us to never lose our trust our dependence upon the Lord, but to persevere in the end. Just like what we have here in Hebrews 10, verses 35 through 39, that part of what it says, you have need of endurance. That's what Asa did not have. And it's a sad story that that's what so many people that start out as a Christian do not have. Endurance. 2 weeks from tonight, Lord willing, we'll look at Ahab. And I'm sure his name ought to be very familiar to us. So read those verses and be prepared for our study. 2 weeks from tonight, we'll have the gospel meeting next Wednesday.